I am a poor wayfaring stranger, while traveling through this world of woe. Yet there's no sickness, toil, or danger in that bright world to which I go. I know dark clouds
I'm going to ask you about how you got to the Epiphany.
That's an interesting...
Wait. We're not there. We're not recording yet.
So that's...
Yes, we are.
That's what I'm going to ask.
We are.
So you have 3 seconds for that memory.
Whatever you're right.
Okay. We're going to do the intro. We should have a bloopers for this season. Hello, and welcome to Tea Time Theology. I'm Ivy Swinsky.
Hello again, everyone. I'm Dwayne Keyes.
And today we are talking to Father Michael Pearson and Cindy Rollins. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Now you can ask your question.
Now you can ask, okay. First of all, Cindy and I were parishioners together over at the Church of the Epiphany at Potter's and Elmwood Avenue in Providence. And I was there from 1981 to 1989. And Cindy came in about... well, you may have been there before, because now you went to Hawaii for a little bit. And were you at the Epiphany before you went?
Actually, I was. You know, turns out, we started going with when my mother's mother passed away. And I was probably like 10 or 11 years old when we started to go to Epiphany.
Oh.
So
was that when Father Good was the rector there?
Yes, that was.
Okay.
We were considered like high church with all the smells and bells and the incense and stuff like that.
Now, had your mother been raised in the Episcopal Church or?
She was at the Church of the Savior, and I only know that because she used to always talk about being a member of Church of the Savior.
Right.
And so I'm not sure exactly how, you know, when her family moved and started to go to Epiphany, they lived about a block away when the neighborhood was probably a lot nicer.
Oh, okay. So they were in the neighborhood of the Epiphany?
Yes.
Did they live closer to Church of the Savior at the time?
2 blocks away. They owned their own house, their own home. And maybe that's why they started at Epiphany. I don't know. That was before we started to go. But when I started, it was like a very high church. It was the old-fashioned church. Like I said, had senior choir and the junior choir, which was a lot of fun.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, but it was Father Good.
Father Good.
You know? Mm-hmm. Had Sunday school and Stations of the Cross. Had a huge Sunday school, like I said.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you had the parish hall had already been built that
That's
time.
Where the Sunday school
that's
was.
That's where Sunday school
the
was.
The old stone building.
Right.
Which really, you know.
Now, then you leave at some point as a young adult.
Yes,
you?
I do. I went to move to Hawaii. I went there for a visit and ended up staying.
And during winters, you knew why you had stayed out there. And then you come back at about 82 or 83 when you're...
Yes, I do. Unfortunately, my father passed away and I came back. You know, they asked if I could come back. And just so we would be company for my mother, and I got very involved in the church at that point.
You certainly did.
God must have been there somewhere. So,
do you remember any, when you came back, was it a lot different than when you had left?
It was smaller. And I'm trying to think of how much different it was. That seems to be so long ago, but it was somewhat, you know, different.
Okay. You know. At that point, there were some people, Church of the Christ Church, Eddy Street had closed. and a number of those parishioners came over. I was thinking people, Gloria Perry, Carrie yes. Crockett.
Carrie Crockett, yes.
Mary Stearns.
Mary Stearns. Yeah. Did Ann Hicks, did she go there?
I think Anne was at St. Stephen's.
Oh, okay. You're sure. Right. She probably was at St. Stephen's.
I think it was St. Stephen's.
So I'm not sure when she came.
So that those were the people I remember, a few other people I remember from Christ Church. Mm-hmm. They were part of the Epiphany.
Right.
But again, it was a parish that I assume when you were there too, you started attending because you were in the neighborhood. And that was very much what we tried to do, even though a lot of people in the parish didn't live in the neighborhood. You all had moved.
We weren't really that close.
Right, so that was a bit of a distance away. So we were drawing from people who had lived in the neighborhood, then moved out to Cranston, or some went as far as Warwick. God forbid they moved out of town.
But they were still attending and they were still coming.
Right, still coming.
I think the times changed and people were really focused on the church and they were willing to travel. Right. They didn't need to go to their a church in the neighborhood. They wanted to go to a church. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
They wanted to go to their church. It didn't matter where it was, right. But they were willing to travel where they needed to go. Cool. So.
No, actually, I asked you, one of the other people, Don and Lorraine Gross, were they there? They were there when...
Yes, they were.
So now, would you have grown up with Carl and
Yes, Ray? I guess, yeah.
Were they at the Epiphany you were a kid?
Yes, well, I don't remember them when we were children.
Okay.
You know, I don't remember them. It was only afterwards. I do remember Donna Rolls and her kids, We were all with Donna. I was in the choir with Donna Rolls. Right. So, and I'm trying to think of who else that was there.
Well, we had again. It was interesting. The Cooks were there.
That's right.
Joyce Cook.
Joyce and Bill Cook.
Cook.
Uh-huh.
Interesting. You could tell a little bit about. I've always thought there was a little competition between the Epiphany and St. Stephen's.
That's right.
Because Mr. Brown went to St. Stephen's.
I didn't know that.
He was the son of Mr. Brown's butler.
No, I never knew that. Right. That's fascinating.
So there was, I think, we won't get into that. There are some feelings there, I think.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Yes.
I'm sure.
Anyway, that's for another story. Maybe another lifetime. Also, one thing I was talking about before, again, how we try to create community. And we had the Dime a Dip Supper. Do you remember?
Dime a Dip Suppers, yeah.
Do you remember what you, there was one we were all singing. And I had to become dressed up as a bride. Mary Stearns was playing the piano, and I was wondering if you remember what you sang, if you would have been a part of this.
Maybe, I don't remember.
The person I was engaged to at the time was there, and also her mother was there,
mm-hmm.
which fortunately her mother got a big kick out of this. She was wondering about her future son-in-law.
Yeah.
So this has been about maybe 85 or something
so
like
maybe.
That.
So maybe. I don't know how you I missed that. I wouldn't remember that.
my performance was forgettable, I can assure you.
We did have some entertainment there. That was kind of nice, yeah.
Again, things that, we were talking about dime-a-dip suppers, where every little dip you took, you had to pay a dime for.
It was very popular. It was very popular. I thought, what a great idea for fundraising.
But when you think about how many funds you actually raised, you probably maybe $50, $60 at the end of the evening.
Probably,
which, compared to nowadays.
The part of it is people getting together, like you said, for community.
Right.
You know?
Are there other things you remember about? You were there. How did things change or what happens?
I think things did. I think the congregation got smaller, you know. Part of it was, not... You know, it always follows, younger families and right. children. I think that's probably part of, what happens with churches. You know, you don't draw in the younger families with younger children. So I know Sunday school was smaller.
Right.
That's... You know? But
I know there's always that challenge of,
exactly,
again, who's moving into the area?
That's right.
And do they have children? And mm-hmm. can you provide programs? Because we did have, I think, a good number of kids in the Sunday school.
We had quite a few.
Right.
I can remember that we had rooms with different grades, which
different
was pretty,
grades, right.
You know, it was in the parish hall.
In the
you
parish
know, downstairs, hall. You had your Sunday school classrooms. Right. You don't get that anymore.
Yeah. No, I remember one of the first things we had to do, we had to go and paint them when I arrived, because they hadn't been painted in a while. So that was one of the early projects we got. Mm-hmm. A lot of the parents to come over and help.
Right. But yeah, things did, change, and I stuck with it, and
when did you leave? Because you're now at Ascension.
I'm at Ascension. I left, not for my own violation. Right. We were closed.
Oh, you were closed. You left.
And there was a lot of feeling around that. We had Karen Frioli came. She was the last priest there. And we did some wonderful things. And she had a fresh approach to how to worship. And she, and I was thinking about that this morning and how the diocese really is like members of the congregation to take an active role in the liturgy. But I think she was the one that started doing that on her own with Epiphany. Mm-hmm. And where you could kind of like help with the communion, you could read the lessons. She wanted people to be more involved in how the service went and taking an active role. And she modeled that after a church in San Francisco called St. Gregory's of Nyssa.
Yes.
I went there for a conference.
Did you
she paid for me to go to a conference there so I could learn how they worked. Very refreshing. And that's when we had started to get around doing Teze. We started to do music, congregation-led music, where you sang without music in front of you. So I would get up and teach people songs.
What was your favorite song?
One time where I'm in the choir now, and we learn songs, and I know a lot of them. And I'll say, oh, that's my favorite. Oh, that's my favorite.
That's bad.
You know, because I enjoy singing. So, but it was very refreshing. Unfortunately, like I said, the neighborhood changed. It was hard to get people. Unfortunately, the bishop at the time did not like what we were doing. Mm-hmm. So she was, number one, actively asking people not to go there.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we heard. You don't want to go to that church. They're about to close anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wow.
And...
can we all take a deep breath?
And we really wanted to stay together. We were very community-based. We did a lot. And I wish I had brought my pictures with me. I'll send those to you when I was looking back at them. Beautiful garden. You remember the garden we had?
Over between the rectory and the...
Yes.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
We kind of like landscaped some things there. And we'd get out there. It was really lovely. The space was really lovely.
Yeah.
And... so we'd have outside, if the weather was nice, we'd have baptisms and people would
get... Would you really?
Yes. I'll send you the pictures. They're just really lovely.
Yes, we'll share them on our Instagram and Facebook page for everyone listening.
You know, but they're just very involved. People were involved in keeping up the grounds, keeping up the property.
Right.
We had to start worshiping in the parish hall.
Oh, okay.
Only because the church was getting rather expensive.
Mm. Right.
And we were a small church. We had a very limited budget. We turned into a mission church.
Mm-hmm.
You probably were aware of that. So we had a very tight budget. And we thought, well, we will worship in the parish hall. We converted the space there.
Oh, okay.
Do you remember that
space? The big space.
And we'd set up chairs there. We'd have the movable altar there.
Right.
You know? We'd use that for...
I remember the one year we had, because we were painting the inside of the church. And so we had to move over to the parish hall for the Eucharist, for the Sunday Eucharist. And actually, it was really a nice space. It was just the right size for us.
Yeah, lovely.
Right.
So it was a really lovely space.
And you're right close to coffee hour. Didn't have to go outside. Set the coffee up at the back of the big room.
That's right.
And
that was an example we got from St. Gregory's of Nyssa.
Oh, okay.
Because they would have their service. And then they would have coffee right there where they were worshiping. Everyone would stand around and, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
And besides the Baptist, does the judge do anything else if the weather is nice outside? Like, I'm thinking the judge is he can see the work of the parish.
This was, I think, mainly for baptism.
Yeah.
Can you hear me okay out here?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Because it was just like, we could set the tub up.
Yeah.
Fill it with water. Mm-hmm. And people, we actually had, I don't know if you remember whether Judy Walker was there.
No.
Probably this was after you had left. We had Kwame met this nice woman. Mm. They got married in the church and raised their children in the church. It was just really lovely. They go to Ascension now. She does.
Oh, okay.
Kwame's passed away, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
So, but it was nice to see that. But she had, before she got married, she had never been baptized. And so she wanted to get baptized at Epiphany. And I always remember that, because she just cried. It was just such a wonderful thing. We're outside, the weather was beautiful like today, but it was in the spring. And her just over was really something.
Oh, that's neat.
And she's a tall woman, so. But she got right down and said, I want to get right into the tub and get baptized and get the water poured over me. I always remember that.
Nice.
So can you tell us a little bit, tell us a little bit about your experience at Epiphany, but also after Father Pearson left in like the early 90s and 2000s, like were you there from the 80s until it closed like the early 2000s the whole time?
I was. And nice. We did have a couple of rectors there, like Father Brunson. I thought there was one other, but maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know.
I was not alive.
I'm just kind of thinking back. The one I remember is Father Brunson, but I think it probably because Craven Friuli made a really big impression on us and on the church, and she was the one that got me more involved in the workings of the church. I can thank her for that, and getting more involved in religion and in the church more than things were different.
Yeah, and can you talk to us a little bit about the experience you had of closing the church? You kind of touched on it, but sort of just tell us that story as much as you're willing.
Well, it was basically we'd found out that the bishop was going to close the church finally, didn't want it to continue, partly because, I'm not sure where she was thinking, but she was not happy the way we were worshiping. It was not what she wanted. She was very traditional way that she thinks that things should be done. She didn't like the fact that we were worshiping in the parish hall. And it was a very practical thing because the church was hard to heat, old stone building. And we took it on ourselves, and why don't we worship here, nice closed place. People could, sit around. Instead of being forward-facing pews, everyone would be facing each other.
Did you have another round?
Kind of, yeah. What was like rows? There were rows of chairs, but you could see each other.
Right.
And then we would stand up around the altar. It was a beautiful table. I have the table actually. I got to take that.
It's
one of my tables, which is I always remember that. And so during communion, we would stand around and receive communion in a circle. So it was more of a. But then the diocese decided that we were going to close, and we had asked. Well, we would like to stay together if we can. Can we worship and find another place, like at the cathedral? We're told, no, we have to close. So, and the idea was people went to different places.
Is that sometime early 2000s?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh. I wish I'll give you those. I'll give you the article about our church and what we did.
Yeah.
Definitely. I saved that.
No, we were talking. I remember your Epiphany pageants from when I was younger, and you're right. We did do so much in a circle for it.
And we used to go around the neighborhood. For Ash Wednesday, we did a Jonathan Daniels.
Oh.
Because he used to go to
Christ Church.
Yeah. He did, and so some people actually met Jonathan Daniels.
Oh wow.
I don't know if you know the story about him.
Can you tell us? Because I don't know if everyone who's listening knows.
He was like an, what was his position? He was learning to be a priest.
Right, he was at Episcopal Divinity School.
He went to Episcopal Divinity School, and he went to Christ Church in Providence as part of his work.
I think
He spent summers there. And so I think Carrie Crockett knew him.
Oh, is that right?
Carrie Crockett said she had met him. And then he went down to the South to help with the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, when he was down there, he was, you know, helping with a protest. And there was a girl who was going into a store, coming out of a store, and someone pointed a shotgun at her, and he stepped in front of the person who was going to shoot her, and he got killed.
Mm-hmm.
So, he, you know, he's considered a martyr.
Right.
So there's actually a Jonathan Daniels Day
mm-hmm.
that the Episcopal Church recognizes every year.
Mm-hmm.
But we used to kind of make a big thing because people knew, you know,
Jonathan Daniels.
Knew him.
Yeah, that's different than...
We'd have special services,
yeah.
Yeah.
You know, around that. So that was one thing we did. I like the fact that we did get out and in the neighborhood so people could see that we were there. And the church I am at now, Ascension, we do that now too. We'll go around the block.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be outside so people see that we're visible and this is an actual church.
Right.
I think that's important,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, being part of the communities the buildings are in.
Exactly. We had a garden.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we grow food, and then people in the neighborhood were welcome to come, and if they wanted to have some vegetables, you know, we had a soup, we had a food pantry.
Mm-hmm.
I had a place, did the food pantry out of the church in the back door.
Man, y'all were busy.
We were busy. You know, we did a big thing around Easter time. We'd have during Holy Week. You know, we'd have kids would make bread,
mm-hmm.
dye Easter eggs. We would have a passion walk, go down to the basement, and I think Kwame Walker would play, you know, Jesus coming
mm-hmm.
up from the tomb, and mm-hmm. kids would down
really?
To the basement and walk up during Easter,
oh, really?
During Easter Vigil, just a little mm-hmm. pageantry there. You know, so we did a lot. And even though we were small, we were a community.
Right.
People were just very involved. Everyone, you know, it wasn't just the person up front that did everything. Everyone, being a small church, was involved in everything
right.
we had to do. You know, one was during Holy Week and foot washing until the Easter
right.
vigil and Easter Day. So. I'm trying to think of something else. Somebody has any questions.
No, you're doing great.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm just trying to understand. So you guys merged with the cathedral or you
No,
became...
they were told that we had to close.
Okay.
And there were some people that just went to the cathedral. We were looking for another church.
Yeah.
Me and my friend decided, because we liked Epiphany so much and we were disappointed that we weren't allowed to continue, is that we went around and visited different churches all over Rhode Island, even
mm-hmm.
as far as Ascension.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went St. Augustine's, rather.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes.
I said it at URI
mm-hmm.
to find a church that had the same warm feeling. And then we ended up at Ascension in Cranston.
Mm-hmm. And that's where the Rolls
yes.
went there.
They went there after, yes.
Is that when Pat goes to Messiah, or just...
No, Pat goes to Grace Church now.
I know, but did she go, when Epiphany closes, did she go to Grace Church at that point?
Well, when... She's at Grace Church.
Right.
And she was living in Saratoga Springs, New York.
That's right.
So she wasn't even in Rhode Island at the time.
Oh, okay.
And then when they moved back here...
Then she starts going to Grace Church.
She went to a smaller church, which is was on Pawtucket Avenue, I think. That church closed. I don't even remember the name of it.
The Church of the Advent?
I think so. Thank you. They started there because they were in the neighborhood.
Mm.
But that church closed. All these small churches.
I know.
Well, I was looking at the map the other day. The Church of the Advent is not that far from 95. So if you think about all these churches... Christ Church Eddy Street would be close to 95. Where the Epiphany, that would have been closer to Route 10.
Mm-hmm.
But all these relatively close to major urban parishes. I was wondering what the history of the Advent was, actually. Because that parish closes about the same time as the Epiphany. Maybe a little bit earlier. But it had to be a neighborhood parish.
I seem to remember that building, and it looked like it was a neighborhood building. The building's still there.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh, okay. The building is still there. Uh-oh. It's on Pawtucket Avenue, or at the near the end of Main Street into Pawtucket Avenue.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a tiny little church on the corner.
Okay.
But you know, my sister and her husband went there for a while.
Okay. Oh, did Church of the Advent closed earlier, though, right? A little earlier than Epiphany.
It might have. I'm trying to remember.
It's hard. There was, like, a lot of churches closed in, like, the early 2000s. The timeline is really wonky,
yeah.
Which is fair. But I think they almost merged here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, it would make sense because spatially they're close to each other.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. But it could be a different world.
I know. Mm-hmm. So many.
What neighborhoods are. How people think of their neighborhood.
And then Cindy and Father Chris, so you were a parish. Did y'all transition or become a mission?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
We did.
And how did that come about with that transition?
I wasn't involved in that. I just know that we were, whether it was the size of the church or whether, you know, there was something that was a decision made by the diocese that we were going to do. Yeah.
It was probably because I remember my last few years there, we were having trouble. We could meet budget, but we couldn't pay our apportionment to the diocese.
Mm.
And we didn't.
Can you explain what apportionment for people who don't know?
Each parish has to pay a certain amount of money to the diocese to support the work and ministry of the diocese.
Mm.
So we could support ourselves, and they could pay for. I was a full-time priest there.
Mm-hmm.
But we were asking not to have to pay the full or partial apportionment.
I seem to remember that now that you mention it, right. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, because if you did, and we would have been an independent parish, if you can't, then the parish can put you on mission status, which gives the diocese more control over the parish. The person who's there would essentially, I guess, the bishop would be responsible.
Yeah,
for the parish.
When you become a mission, you get a priest in charge, and
exactly.
The bishop is like technically your rector.
Right.
Yes,
right.
That's exactly.
It takes in wealthy people. Don't get me started talking about the mobile station again.
The what?
The mobile station on the corner where the diocese.
Oh, right. Oh, yes.
The Epiphany owned property at the corner of Potters and Elmwood Avenue.
Okay.
And at some point in, I think it's the 50s,
mm-hmm.
That property is sold, or Mobil Oil puts mm-hmm. a gas station there.
Okay.
And the Epiphany was to receive a certain amount of income
that's
for
right.
that property.
That's right.
Makes
but
sense. They owned it.
If you think of what the price of gasoline was in the 1950s,
mm-hmm.
and what it was in 1980.
Yeah.
Slight increase.
Yeah.
Well, our income from that property did not increase at the same rate.
Oh.
That, so Mobil Oil may had a good deal.
They had a good deal. They were really getting that, you know, leasing that for a song.
Oh, but, so you kept the property of the physical space and they leased it from you.
I think it was a lease.
Okay.
I think it was a lease too, right.
Bishop Nisley told me a couple of years ago
mm-hmm.
that the lease had finally ended, but we no longer own the property. So the diocese now owns that, and it can get the fair market value of that.
Interesting.
And I'm just imagining, like,
We tried to break the lease.
Okay, because I'm trying to think, like, how does it go from Epiphany owning the property to diocese owning the property? And that's why I'm like, did this all happen when your status changed from parish to mission?
I think it happens after the parish is closed.
Okay.
Because mm-hmm. Bishop Nisley, the parish closes under Bishop Wolfe.
Yes.
But Bishop Nisley is the one who told me that, in fact, the lease had run out. So the diocese presumably now gets the income.
But they still own that property?
I can't tell you what. They could have sold it to Mobil Oil.
Oh. Go ask your questions.
I mean, so for someone who, you know, focuses on anti-poverty, anti-displacement, economic mobility, and more of like focusing on when we talk about reparations and what does it mean in terms of assets and the diocese's role in terms of this work, it's just disheartening when I see like predominantly Black and Brown churches, just like we see in the city in Providence and throughout the state, like the wealth that community, it's not just it's the community, it's also the wealth of that that's being taken by predominantly white led groups or leadership and deciding how that's being utilized. Because then, Cindy, to your point, you're told you're closed. There's not even a discussion about where you all can meet here or you all can even merge. And although there may be, I would say, like protocols within the church, we are dealing with people and human, God's children. Like, how can that be acceptable as treatment? And then I'm just thinking of the impact to all of y'all to be told, no, you're going to be closing and there's no other way of like,
there was no discussion. It's going to happen.
Were you on the vestry at that time?
I was on the vestry at the time. I didn't just give up being senior warden.
Oh, okay.
But I was senior warden for the long time. And as things were, I decided that Judy to give it, you know, ask someone else to run because I was on there for longer than I probably needed to be. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those jobs where, you know, if you do a halfway decent job, they don't want you to leave.
Very true.
Yeah. And I'm senior warden again on this church. I'm like, but it's interesting what you were saying about that predominantly church. I'm thinking about the church that my sister goes to.
Yeah.
She goes to Grace Church.
Right.
Grace Church is in the middle of downtown Providence with a lot of wealthy people, a lot of property, and it's well attended. It's near, you know, Brown and, you know, RISD, huge choir, and it's probably one of the most successful churches. I'm just thinking about that and how that works when you think about other churches who are not, you know, who are in like less affluent areas and how they're struggling. You know, it's just a thought.
Well, it's even if you think about Grace Church, because there was, again, how you're influenced by what's happening around you.
Mm-hmm.
There was, back in the 80s, what street is Grace Church on?
Westminster.
It's on Westminster. So at one point, the city closes Westminster to traffic.
Correct.
Mm.
And so that would have had, I think, an impact on Grace Church. Also, people are not moving into downtown. But then when that changes, then that's exactly what happens to Grace Church. Then they open up Westminster Street again. Johnson and Wales takes over a lot of what's going on there.
That's right.
And you are right.
The number of apartments that are being created downtown, either for some of the really high-end apartments, and then also college. There's a lot of stuff. I mean, trying to create downtown. Yeah. I mean,
I mean, you have Water Fire. You have the mall that's open. I mean, I remember the mall had just opened when I moved to Providence. You had all this bustling activity.
Right.
And so there's this focus on investing in downtown. And as someone who also attended Grace Church, not knowing that context, you're like, oh, you see a thriving, booming community.
Exactly.
You see that. And then at the same time as that is, you see that investment, you start to see some things transition. So Traveler's Aid, which you now know as Crossroads, moves out of downtown and moves across the highway to where the old YMCA building is on Broad Street near that highway into, you know, the South Providence, South Side.
So that's
section.
Traveler's Aid.
That is Traveler's Aid.
On the board of Traveler's Aid.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm just thinking of, you know, to this point, it's like there's focus and investment in certain areas. And I just can't but help make the connection that the areas that they're having to focus tend to be predominantly white groups, communities that are getting that focus and attention and investment that goes along with it. Versus when I hear about this closure of all these other parishes that are pretended where they're integrated or predominantly Black and Brown, they tend to be in areas where there's been disinvestment. There has been you know, with this change, there's not the support that goes along with sustaining or helping those parishes to grow.
Those are usually the places that need parishes the most.
Correct.
Exactly. That's a good point.
Or if you can stay present, because neighborhoods are always changing.
Right? Yes, they are.
I mean, and ideally, parishes would change, reflect that change.
Yes.
I mean, there's always going to be wealth either coming out or going, just the nature of the economy. And to give up, when you think about these different places, Christchurch, there's no Episcopal presence in South Providence
anymore. No, there isn't.
Correct.
No.
St.
Closest
Michael's
is Ascension, actually.
And that's Cranston.
I know, but that's the thing, because that's where I live.
Yeah.
And after Messiah closed, the closest place to us, which is Grace, which is the other side of the highway, or Ascension, that's a really large area to have no presence in. A lot of people live there, too.
And I mean, the closest you may even have is All Saints.
Yeah, so, I guess All Saints would be a little closer, just the other side of the highway.
Exactly. Yeah, you think about it too. It's like, are they another parish that's based in that neighborhood? Are they getting the support, attention, or your opportunity to reach out to those communities that need that outreach and God's love and attention and care?
Yeah, and I don't know enough about their particular story to say anything.
And as far as I know, with All Saints, that's the ones that's over across the crossroads, right?
Yes.
And from what I've heard, and I don't know if you've heard anything about this too, is that the building itself is heavily endowed as long as the church stays open.
Yeah.
So it does not matter how many people are actually attending the church.
Mm. Well, they're fortunate that
they
have.
Fortunate with that, yeah.
Whether, if you were to ask them whether they have enough money to maintain it,
that's another story.
That's a different conversation.
But they're trying. I mean, they have meal sites there, so they're.
Oh, they do. Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they're trying to do the same sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's interesting. If you were, if you compare it to, say, the Epiphany, we are very definitely in a residential neighborhood.
Yes.
All Saints is not technically in a residential. I mean, on the one side, you've got 95, which is going to be a natural barrier. Then you have you'd have Classical High School. Then as you go up the other way, you have Planned Parenthood and
Crossroads.
So it's not a neighborhood per se.
Right.
So it'd be interesting to see if you were over in, say, South Providence, by Amos House.
Yeah.
Would you feel that that's your neighborhood?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Whereas I would think people would feel that St. Michael's is in their neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or Redeemer as also being in the neighborhood.
Right. Yeah. Ascension as well as a neighborhood place.
Right. Mm-hmm. Ascension's very much a neighborhood.
Yes.
But we don't have any parishes in these large portions of Providence.
Yeah.
We've lost a presence.
Exactly. And it's so important, especially now, to have a presence, you know, have something.
And even in Providence, I mean, downtown Providence, since the cathedral's closed,
you have Grace Church.
You have Grace Church, All Saints.
All Saints.
Redeemer.
But again, if you, I mean, as I've been told, this is very much as you look at your neighborhood.
Yes.
You go from maybe Camp Street down to going farther this direction. You can't see which direction I'm pointing
in. It's true. Yeah.
Sorry, as you go, I guess, east into what was this area be called?
So this, I mean, they have, there's the neighborhood planning map that the city of Providence has, which I can't stand that map either. And, you know, I mean, just say this, the east side. I mean, it is the east side area, you know, and when you think of Camp Street, some people call it Mount Hope. I mean, these historical neighborhoods. But if you were to look on the city of Providence's planning map, they have a whole another different name for it, which I think either the neighbors rejected, just like with me living on the south side, and they call it Upper South Providence, which I'm like,
so weird.
I cringe when I hear that name. And you can definitely tell who's new. yes. when they use these terms. So
yeah. And St. Martin's. I don't want to forget them.
Yes.
I don't need anyone telling me we forgot one.
Which is on the east side.
Yes.
But that's really a...
Yeah.
Yes.
Down by the other river.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah.
We found the entire plot of the
I know.
on the abandonment of the city.
Well, it's interesting when to think about as neighborhoods changes, and also we don't plant parishes in these neighborhoods. I mean, it's one thing for a parish to close, because sometimes that's appropriate, or to merge, but to lose a presence in all of South Providence, the West End, Elmwood, there's no Episcopal presence in any of this.
Right.
And that's, I think says something.
It does say, and the focus has changed. You know, it used to be way back, probably before my time, you always have in a neighborhood, wanted to have something that people could gather around in the neighborhood, a church, right. like you said, as a presence.
Right.
And the focus has changed, and I'm not sure what it's changed to, but like you said, in areas where churches would be valuable and needed, even if it is to hand out food to people or homeless people, it's not there.
It seems as if other, I think of other parishes, denominations, certainly St. Michael's in South Providence, has continued very active.
Yeah.
And I was over there with my wife at the library, and we met somebody who now lives down in Narragansett, but he was raised in that parish, and he still comes back and supports it.
Yeah,
I mean, he's really committed because he still feels a connection to the neighborhood as he knew it, but also to that parish's ministry to the neighborhood as it is now.
And that's a prime example that you do see that in South Providence, but to your point, you do not see any type of engagement from the Episcopal Church in the neighborhood.
Exactly.
Because even if you don't have the physical church, we'll think about with Jesus. Jesus didn't have a physical church either. He was just out there ministering to people. And so when I think about that, as I'm thinking of living in a resident of that neighborhood, I'm like, you're not present or engaged in all these opportunities to meet people.
Right. You could even have a storefront. Exactly. There's a lot of empty storefronts in those neighborhoods, too. Yes.
And there are a lot of people. I mean, you have St. Michael's, South Providence, and then Church of the Assumption on Potter's Avenue, which is down by Cranston Street.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, both of them, I don't know a lot about the Assumption anymore, but it's still an active parish.
That's the one on Cranston Street.
Well, it's on Potter's Avenue.
No,
just as you get
church.
Down to, you're about a block or so from Cranston Street.
Oh, okay. Yes. Right. I know where you are. I was at a different church. I don't know the name of it.
But we've abandoned any presence in those areas. And not to say that other churches aren't. I mean, Truth Tabernacle is now at the Epiphany.
And are they really?
And I went in there one Wednesday night, back in, I think it was September of 2013. And I saw the lights on, so I decided I was taking a cooking class.
Okay.
And up farther on Elmwood Avenue. So I drove down Elmwood and saw the doors open, the lights on. So I decided to go in. And there were a Wednesday night prayer meeting. And there were about, I'm going to guess, 30, 40 people in there on a Wednesday night. And I sat in the back of the church, and then the pastor came to me and probably thought I was a troubled soul. No doubt I am, but I said, no, I just wanted to be here. So then he lets me stay there. And then a few minutes later, somebody else comes and I explain who I am and how this is, I've been the rector of this parish. And they couldn't have been nicer. But it was a charismatic evangelical parish that had started over in East Providence sometime. And when the Epiphany closed, they bought the building. And they now, they're making a go of it.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, I don't think I could get 30 people out on a Wednesday night. Although we'd have a dozen for Bible study. So we did our best. But God's work is being done. But I'm just sorry that we aren't doing it there anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, me too.
Yeah.
And you just brought up another point, because I know that when Epiphany was closed and obviously was sold, there was the effort of Jonathan Daniels' house.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that was the connection.
I remember that too. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I know that that was something that the late, Ricky Brightman had was initiated. Mm. And I know that there was some programming, but then it stopped and you haven't heard anything about what's being done since. So this is like, it was supposed to have been something like dedicated in terms of that work using proceeds from the sale of Church of the Epiphany.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, no, it was part of the Episcopal Service Corps.
Mm.
So it was a program of that. It's pretty much like AmeriCorps with Jesus, run by the Episcopal Church. So it was, and they did have a couple classes that went through that. It did close. It closed, I want to say like 2014. Mm. Jonathan Daniels' house.
Yeah.
I don't know where that whole thing stands beyond the fact that it is closed, though. Yeah. But it was in the rectory of St. Mary's East Side, Epiphany East Side. There was like another rectory on the east side.
St. Mary's East Providence?
East Providence. East Providence. There we go. East Side, East Providence. There was an East in it. We got there.
We got there.
Yes. Do you have any back row questions?
Which I keep thinking on the board for that for a while. And how that started at Epiphany and then it closed. That was one location that was lost to us. We tried to find a place to have the soup kitchen.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Go right from the Epiphany to St. Stephen's?
No, we were looking for a place. We had it at Grace Church at one point, but they decided they didn't want it there. We had it, which looked at All Saints, they didn't want it there. So it was this whole, and we ended up at St. Stephen's finally, which was a good spot for it.
Well, it's one of those things. I know St. Stephen's, it may have picked up on, because they used to do something on January 1st.
Yes.
They always gave a supper.
Yes, they did.
So that
they
may have been built on that.
Yes.
That they were already doing it. They had the kitchen facilities for it.
They had very good kitchen facilities.
And it's not bad for the bus if you have to, you can take the bus up from downtown.
Yes, it's easy to get to.
Easy to get to. Since we've talked about how many Episcopal parishes have closed, can you think? None have been opened.
The last church to be opened was actually Emmanuel in Cumberland.
Oh, really?
That was the last church that opened in the diocese.
How long ago was that?
That's a great question that I do not know. I think it was 80s, 90s. I know because my grandfather was involved in the opening, and he's been dead for a hot second, so... It's been a while.
I'm going to say it's been at least in the 80s, because it was active when Crucio was active. They had a number of people there who were, so maybe 70s.
Yeah, and I think, there have been creations, because I think like the Hispanic ministry at Ascension, like that's a newer. Right.
Yes.
But I don't know if you would, that's not like a good old-fashioned like barn-raising church moment.
Right.
And like Church Beyond Walls.
I was wondering about Church Beyond Walls, if that's still...
Yes. Yeah.
Which is really...
They just celebrated their, 10-year anniversary
something. That's wonderful.
Yeah. But those, I think, they're a little different than just, building a church in a space and being, this area.
Oh, see, the other church that's survived is Transfiguration.
Yes.
And they've started... They have Hispanic ministry and also...
Oh, do they really? Yeah.
I don't know if they have that. They have a really active food pantry because actually with my other job, we actually did COVID vaccine clinics there. They opened their doors to the National Guard and
Wonderful. That's wonderful.
Yeah, we got them connected. We did some flu shot clinics there, COVID vaccines, and their food pantry is very active.
Mm-hmm. I think they're in a good location.
Yeah, they're in a great location.
Yeah.
Because they're on the Cranston side of Broad Street.
Right. And very visible, you know.
Yeah. I'm right next to the library, which is always a good place to go to church.
Well, we exactly. Were just, the Epiphany was right, just right down from the library.
That's right.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah.
Now, do you two know who, since so many churches have merged with Grace at some point, or the cathedral, the cemetery, that was closer to Epiphany, right? That's
no.
In
no.
The area?
Cemeteries.
Which... You mean
the one that's on Broad Street?
Yeah, you're talking about Trinity Square, and that's from.
Oh no! Oh, you're talking about the other one, Oakland Cemetery.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
On Broad Street.
Does that always been owned by Grace?
The one that's where Elmwood and Broad come
yeah.
together.
That's
a Grace Church
that's
cemetery.
That's a Grace Church cemetery.
And that's always been Grace Church.
Yes.
It
yes.
wasn't owned
yes.
by someone else.
Right, because there's one Episcopal bishop is buried there. Henshaw?
That's correct. I can't Henshaw. Remember who, but mm-hmm. that's always Henshaw. Been. The Grace Church. And then, yes, there's a cemetery. If you go further down,
yes.
Elmwood,
yes.
that was across the street from the mobile station.
Right. That's
mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm not sure who owns
yeah,
that.
That's, me neither.
The city.
I want to say that is some other entity, which compared to the cemeteries, and again, this is me speaking Southside neighbor, that cemetery closer to Epiphany site is very much well, very well maintained, organized, mm-hmm. in order. The other one closer to where I live, let's just say a lot of work has gone into improving the area and stuff
right.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
But there has been, when I've talked to neighbors, you know, there has been a sense that it has felt abandoned at times.
Mm-hmm.
Has been
the Grace Church.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Terrence, you mentioned the one that's right across the street from the Epiphany,
mm-hmm.
and being, say, the Epiphany. And I think I only had one or two funerals at that cemetery
mm-hmm.
in all the years that I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember. So I wonder at what point is,
yeah.
I assume it's a neighborhood cemetery
mm-hmm.
of people from the...
I mean, whatever organization is managing or owns it, they're doing a great job in maintaining
yeah.
it.
But to be
that's good. That's good
that
to
is.
Know.
Yeah.
No,
I was just wondering with, since we've been talking a lot about churches merging, what happens to, like, the cemetery if churches merge and that kind of stuff? Because
well.
A couple of churches have those sorts of, or even, like, Redeemer has that ashes garden.
Right.
Or maybe they don't. I don't remember. But there are a couple. They do. Yes.
I mean, I think that's been an issue at times at Grace Churches. Have they been able to put the money into it?
For maintaining
for
it, right?
For maintaining it. And
no. But and
not
it is
my
hard.
Problem, but,
yeah.
no,
when you become a rector, you don't expect to be a cemetery curator as
no.
well.
But if you're the rector of Grace Church, you inherit the cemetery with you.
Yes.
So, yeah.
It's hard.
And,
is there any other things that you two wanted to touch on, think about, any just fun memories you have?
Well, I have lots of fond memories of the
Me too. I do too, but...
but the real challenge to me is how do you stay engaged with the community? How do you continue a presence? And do you have, if you're the diocese, do you have a vision of how you want to have a presence in these different areas?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to plan for it? Are you going to... It's easy when you see lots of open land and you can see the town's going that way, so you can buy land and you can see what the future is going to be there. But how do you see, say, in the West End or South Providence?
Mm-hmm.
What do we have any presence? Do we want to have a presence there? What does it say if we say to ourselves, honestly, we don't feel called there? What does that say about us?
Mm-hmm.
So that's just, and how parishes adapt to communities. I mean, this, just a little bit, St. Stephen's. I mean, I remember when I went to St. Stephen's back in the mid-70s. It was very much university and neighborhood.
Yeah.
Now, Brown is just swallowing things up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So that's changing. I mean, we had people who could walk to church, and they would walk to church. But now we don't have that many people, I mean, other than students, but in
mm-hmm.
terms of people who own their own homes, who could, that's changed a lot. And that's going to be just the nature of things, trying to find a parking place over there.
There's no parking over there.
Yeah. And that's how you manage programs. So, I mean, how do you change? Your environment's going to change because it's constantly changing. How can you adapt and how can you plan for it? I think that's a real challenge.
It is a challenge.
Congregations and also for a diocese.
It is a challenge. And I think the way church is viewed nowadays, that's, you know, a lot of, that's a challenge there. People now view churches differently. They view religion differently than they did when I was growing up.
Right.
And, you know?
But that offers its own challenges,
yes,
own opportunities.
Does.
If you're, if again, you can think critically and strategically. Father Patrick, who talks about the developers from Boston, are certainly looking at Providence to see how they can make some money.
Yeah.
How do we see ourselves looking out here, and how can we create context when people can learn about Jesus.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
And we can celebrate the gospel and share the gospel.
Just, you know, mentioned is like, do we want to? And I think that's also very important because there's the idea of like strategizing and planning for that. But part of it is to be that you have to have the will and want to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great question to pose to the diocese, to the bishop, to diocesan council. What is it that they want to do? What do they see in terms of this vision for the diocese, in terms of this work, in terms of being present, particularly when it comes to Black and brown communities that have been harmed by what has been done? And I look forward to hopefully getting the answer to that question.
or starting the conversations.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be interesting if you took a map of, oh, you could do it with the state, you could do it whatever. And talk about where parishes were, which ones have closed, which populations have been affected by this.
Or even moved. Because in Cranston, St. David's used to be like right near where I live.
Oh, is that
right?
But now, really?
Yeah, it used to be across from Cranston Printworks. Oh. And then that building closed. It's actually funny, the baptismal font is in Governor Sprague Mansion, and then they moved to St. David's on the Hill, which is like another community that did need
That's a growing community.
Yeah, so that was a growing community. So they moved farther out, but then that also means that where they were, now there's like not really a church there either. Because I was so surprised because I was like, St. David's is so far from where I live. Like, not actually, but like, very far.
You wouldn't consider it part of your community.
No, that's a completely different area of the city.
Right.
So I also think it's funny, it's not even just like closing because like they need to or financial. It's also like, all right, if you're moving communities as well, what are you implementing in the communities that you've left at the same time?
Yeah, one of the other challenges, if you put on your diocesan hat, what does it mean when you may not, you don't need that kind of space to be church, but what are the other options?
Mm-hmm.
It says something to you, it says something about your status when you can have a building, but you don't have to be. To be a disciple of Jesus, you don't have to have the status. You can, that can take place in lots of different spaces.
Exactly.
So how do you create? How do you see what those other options are? And do people want to think about it? I mean, because we, those of us who have grown up in the church, I mean, I like spaces. I like the space at the Epiphany.
I loved it.
I love the space here. But I could also follow Jesus if I didn't have these spaces.
That's right. That's why I love the idea of the church without walls. I was just so glad that they're still going on, that whole idea. It's very visible, you know.
I was involved with that for a while.
I
mean, what was so interesting is, if I think about some of my happiest moments in the church, it's all about relationships.
Yep.
And first of all, I saw people, some people at Church Beyond the Walls who I knew from Avon House, which is a shelter for the homeless. Mm-hmm. So somebody from there, I actually saw them up at the Epiphany Soup Kitchen. So this relationship that's gone on
yes.
for 40-some-odd years. But also that creation, you would see every Saturday, even though you're downtown, no matter what the weather is, you're down there and you're celebrating the sacrament, sharing a meal, you're finding out how people are, you're praying for one another. I mean, it was everything that a parish is, except it didn't have walls. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it had everything else.
Yeah.
So you don't need the walls.
Well, I think it also comes up to how do you define parish and what does that mean? Does parish need a building? It's the same thing thinking about, like, I know we didn't talk as much about the cathedral, but also, like, what does it mean to be a cathedral? What does that mean in this space? How is that different from just a regular church? And I think those are also, to talk about the larger ideas you've been bringing up, I think those are the first questions you have to ask, is what, how are we defining these things?
Right.
Part of the thing about cathedral is the one thing, again, talks about relationships, because cathedral is technically where the bishop's seat is. Mm-hmm. So how do you see yourself in relationship with the bishop? What's the space that we allow this, where this can take place? Mm. I mean, when you go to the Ascension, you're gathering there or with your priest. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And at the cathedral, you're gathering around the bishop, symbolically.
Yep.
And for some people, I've heard old-time Episcopalians talk about this, they have a great sense of connectedness with the cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
And going there different times of the year, and the bishop would be the, what was it, United Thank Offering in gatherings or ordinations or diocesan convention. But they really, I mean, to hear them talk about it, mm-hmm. they felt connected.
Right.
Yeah.
I remember at Epiphany years ago is how at one point we'd have things like baptisms during Easter and everyone would gather at the cathedral and celebrate. Okay. Remember that? And it was just lovely.
Right. I mean, that was, again, one of the things, I don't remember that specifically, but that was one of the things that I know was, they tried at different times
mm-hmm.
to get every mm-hmm. parishes or deaneries to come down to the cathedral so you could be together as a larger family.
And it was wonderful.
Yeah. Because we have so few opportunities.
So few.
Together.
Right? Yeah. The core of what we are is a community.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Does anyone have any thoughts, feelings, wins, ideas that they would like to share?
I'm sure I'll think of something.
Me too. Me too. Yeah. But this was good. This was very good.
Yes. Well, thank you both so much for coming and sharing your memories with us and your time. And if we wanted to see you on a Sunday morning, where would we do that?
It depends. You might find me at St. Stephen's over on George Street. You might find me at St. Paul's in Pawtucket. If you come to Good Friday or Holy Saturday, you might find me at Church of the Ascension in Cranston.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You'll be there.
I'll be there.
Yes.
See, that's where I am.
We need like a Michael Pearson tracker. Like, you know, they have the right. Santa tracker.
Well,
that should be on the diocesan webpage.
This is another whole thing. Yeah. In July, if you want to come to the Church of the Redeemer on Hope Street.
Yes.
If the rector invites me back. I was going to say, one of the other issues you can all talk about is the need for supply clergy.
Yes.
No, we're going to be in discussion with that, but you know, that if we've...
Right, because you're now without a priest for a little bit, at least.
Yeah, we're hoping that we're working on that.
Right. Yes. Season 7. Supply clergy.
Supply clergy.
Where are they?
Well, when you interviewed them the first time, it was retired clergy.
Yes. Can you retire from service?
Can you sign?
Great question.
That is a great
Awesome. Well, thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you so very much. Yeah.
I'm going there to see my father. I'm going there no more to roam. I'm only going over Jordan. I'm only
thank you for listening to Tea Time Theology, a ministry of St. John's Cathedral in Rhode Island. We would like to thank our producers, Ivy Swinsky and Taylor Wilkie. Special thanks to Mario Akande and David Hines for this season's music. Additionally, we would like to thank Dwayne Keyes for co-hosting this season and the Reverend Patrick Campbell for consulting this season. Our sponsor, the Episcopal Diocese of Rhode Island, and the Right Reverend Nicholas Nisley, as well as our guests today. Follow us at Tea Time Theology on all social medias.